This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for November 15th, 2017. On today's show, we're going to be taking a look at the Rotten Tomatoes score for Justice League. We'll be taking a look at the opening weekend box office tracking for that movie. Quentin Tarantino supposedly wants Tom Cruise for his upcoming film. Christopher Tolkien resigns from the Tolkien estate. What does this mean for the future of Lord of the Rings? And there's a film called Boss Level that we want to talk about. And in addition to that, we're going to get into the mailbag, and we're going to be talking about separating the ability to separate the art from the artist. This is Peter Serretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film senior writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's up?
And Slash Film writer Y Tran Bui.
Hey, everybody.
See, now that you're back, you're on every episode, HT. So
this is... I know. This is very exciting. I feel like a special guest.
Let's jump right into it, because Justice League is coming out this week. And as we reported yesterday on the podcast, Rotten Tomatoes had was saying that they were going to hold the score, the Rotten Tomatoes score, for that film to debut on their web series. But apparently they messed up, and the score leaked early. So what do we know, HT?
So the review embargo for Justice League was lifted this morning, early this morning, and the reviews started trickling in. And usually we would see the Rotten Tomatoes score pop up immediately afterwards, but because Rotten Tomatoes is pushing back that reveal until Thursday at midnight, we had no such hope of that, except for an unofficial sort of leak on Flixer, which is also owned by Fandango, the parent company of Rotten Tomatoes. So if you checked Flixer that morning, you would see the Rotten Tomatoes score right there on the app. But unfortunately, the score was taken down shortly afterwards. But people who were eagle-eyed and saw the score right away screenshotted it, and we saw that it had at first a 48%. And later on, a 51% before it was taken down. So that would certify it as a rotten rating. The Rotten Tomatoes scoring level goes as up until 60%, it's rotten. But after you get to 60 to 75%, that is fresh. And 75% and above, it is certified fresh. So it's a mixed bag, decidedly.
And I know a lot of people on Twitter, I see a lot of people in my film Twitter stream being like, of course it's rotten, of course. But I think it's kind of surprising that one out of every two critic that is in this Rotten Tomatoes rating thus far has liked the movie. Do you know what I mean? Half the critics are liking the movie. I think even though the movie is rotten, I think that is a... vast improvement over Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad, which it was like, what, one out of every five critics liked the movie?
This puts Justice League decidedly in the middle of all the DCEU movies, and it could even go higher because we saw that 3-point jump in the 2 hours that the Rotten Tomatoes score was on Flixster. So it could be up to 60% even, or just getting by the fresh rating once the official rating becomes revealed on Thursday. So you never know.
Have either of you seen the movie yet?
I have not.
No, I see it tonight.
I'm interested to get your impressions on it. By the way, I saw Downsizing last night, which I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about, but it premiered at a film festival, so I'm sure I can. And I really liked it. I liked it a lot. I know it's getting mixed reviews, and I can totally understand why it's getting mixed reviews. I think older audiences will not like this movie. I think it's not a movie that's an easy sell. It's very different than what it's being promoted as, and it's weird. It's a weird movie. So I enjoyed it. But anyways, let's get back to Justice League. We were talking about the Rotten Tomatoes score, but you know, none of that matters if it isn't for the money that it's going to make. Because if it is not a success, you know, that will determine what Warner Brothers does with the future of this franchise. So, Ben, you wrote this up for the site. What is Justice League tracking as?
Yes. So right now, Variety reports that the opening weekend number domestically that they're sort of anticipating that Justice League is going to make is going to be $110 million. So Batman versus Superman pulled in $166 million in that film's opening weekend. Wonder Woman only pulled in, I think it was like 103. Yeah, that's right, 103 million. So it's, you know, Justice League is looking to be higher than Wonder Woman, lower than Batman vs. Superman. So take all of that as you will. It's sort of one of those things where it seems like this movie is going to be critic proof just because it has these characters coming together in live action for the first time, as we've seen with Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad. Both of those movies had way worse reviews than what Justice League is currently looking at, according to the leak from this morning. Those movies opened, you know, and had like a 25-26% or something like that on Rotten Tomatoes, but still ended up making, you know, $800 million or something. So I'm guessing Justice League is probably going to be in that realm as well. It also could end up doing very well worldwide in its opening weekend. The estimates, according to Deadline, are that it could pull in anywhere from 325 to 355 million because it's opening in China at the same time as in like over 4,000 theaters in North America. Obviously, the Chinese audience is a really big draw, especially for, you know, big budget blockbuster superhero films like this. And if it does end up pulling in those numbers, that would put it way higher than Suicide Squad and Deadpool, which also was like a huge international success last year. So
yeah,
that's what we're looking at.
And Mark Hughes from Forbes.com mentions on Twitter that, you know, it might not be as brutal as it looks because Batman vs. Superman suffered brutal weekly drops, where Justice League will probably, he estimates, will have a higher cinema score, a higher audience rating, and will probably not suffer as deadly of a weekly drop and have longer legs. Obviously, this is just speculation, but we'll be monitoring this as Justice League is released, obviously. And we were also talking last week about Quentin Tarantino's next film, which was supposed to be like a Charles Manson movie, but it's kind of just a movie about 1969. We now have learned that he has a big star in mind. HT, what do we know?
So the Charles Manson movie that's not a Charles Manson movie from Quentin Tarantino is eyeing Tom Cruise for one of the roles. We do not know what role it is, but he could possibly be playing Charles Manson himself, which would be certainly an intriguing choice. I think Quentin Tarantino has made a really great use of really familiar Hollywood actors and turning them into great character actors. We saw that with Brad Pitt and Glorious Bastards and Leonardo DiCaprio and Django Unchained. So Tom Cruise would be one of the star-studded names that are in the running for this 1969 movie, which includes Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, as well as Margot Robbie. None of the roles are nailed down yet, although Robbie is reportedly in the running for Sharon Tate, who was one of the women murdered in the Manson family murders.
By the way, Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia is one of my favorite movies of all time, and Tom Cruise is amazing as a maniac self-help guru in that movie. And watching his performance in that movie, I could totally see him playing Manson. Ben, do you have any opinion on this?
Yes, I would love to see Tom Cruise work with somebody like Tarantino. I feel like Cruise has sort of fallen in with the same set of collaborators over and over again. And, you know, he's great in like the Mission Impossible movies and stuff like that. But I feel like he is one of those guys that is consistently undervalued in terms of his acting ability. I feel like he has range, but just is so rarely called upon to actually exhibit it in movies these days. So I feel like Tarantino would be one of those guys that, you know, gives him the shot in the arm that I and many of his other fans think that he needs to sort of shock him out of this sort of action movie stupor that he's been in over the past few years. And again, I like those movies that he's done. You know, Edge of Tomorrow is fantastic, for example. But I just think there's so much more to Tom Cruise that we haven't seen yet that can be unlocked and utilized by the proper director. And Tarantino seems to be that guy.
Also in the news, you know, we were talking about Amazon is going to be producing and releasing a Lord of the Rings prequel TV series that we don't know much about, but we've now learned that Christopher Tolkien has resigned from the Tolkien estate. What does this mean for the future of Lord of the Rings in movies and television? Ben, what do we know?
So, yeah, Christopher Tolkien, who is the son of J.R.R. Tolkien, had been sort of the head of the Tolkien estate. He is 93 years old, and he has now decided to step down from that position of leadership in the company, I guess, the estate. And I guess what we really, the interesting thing here is that he stepped down in August and word is just now coming out about this now. So as you know, the Amazon Lord of the Rings deal just happened a few days ago. So I think it's safe to say that that happened without Christopher Tolkien's input, because he famously was not a fan of Peter Jackson's movie adaptations of Lord of the Rings. And he has been, from what I understand, sort of the one who's been, you know, keeping Hollywood at arm's length from all of the Tolkien stories, basically, since then. So, I think that this could mean that, like, theoretically, the Silmarillion could be optioned for a separate TV show, you know, aside from this Lord of the Rings show that's going on, this Lord of the Rings prequel series. Other Tolkien works could conceivably come forth. And as Jacob Hall speculates in his article that he wrote at slashfilm.com, which you can read, and I would recommend that you do that, he says that a theme park could potentially buy the rights to like a Middle Earth land, which I think when we talked about like what sort of theme parks, movies we would want to see turned into theme parks, I think that was one of my choices. So I would love to see something like that come to pass. Without Christopher Tolkien sort of in that position of leadership, it seems like the floodgates could open and we could see more Tolkien works coming to Hollywood sometime soon.
While we're recording this podcast, not huge news, but it has been revealed that Disney's Prince Charming film that they are setting writer-director Stephen Chomsky, who did The Wonder for that Disney live-action fairy tale. Not much is known about that. I haven't seen Wonder. I'm not a huge fan of Stephen's work. Do either of you have an opinion on that?
He also did The Perks of Being a Wallflower, which was a fine
movie. I actually really loved that film. I felt like that really captured the coming of age, story.
And he wrote Beauty and the Beast, right? So the new version that came out this year. So I guess that's a, Disney, as they tend to do, is keeping it in the family again.
Oh, for sure. Anyways, moving on to stuff that is actually on our list of stuff to get to. And that is the last one is a movie called Boss Level, coming from Joe Carnahan. this is like a time loop movie. This sounds like something I'm interested in.
Yes. So Joe Carnahan, who's the guy who directed movies like The A-Team and Smoke and Aces, Narc, The Gray, stuff like that. He is in negotiations with Mel Gibson and Frank Grillo to star in an indie action thriller called Boss Level, in which Grillo will play a retired special forces veteran trapped in a never-ending loop, resulting in his death every day. So this seems to be the latest in this sort of Groundhog Day tropes exploration that, you know, Hollywood seems to be doing. They just released Happy Death Day not too long ago, which it seemed to have this almost this exact same premise. As I just mentioned a little while ago, Edge of Tomorrow does this as well. I really like the idea of Frank Grillo teaming up with Joe Carnahan for this movie, and I'm not crazy about Mel Gibson being in this. I cannot fathom why Mel Gibson is still getting work. We're seeing all of these, I guess, accusations and allegations and stuff tear, yeah, you know, all these waves through Hollywood right now, and Mel Gibson seems to be just sort of skating by as if, you know, whatever he did a few years ago has just completely left the public consciousness. He's starring in Daddy's Home 2 right now, and nobody seems to be doing anything about this, and I just can't I don't understand why people are freaking out about some things and seem to be willing to give Mel Gibson a pass here.
You know, we're going to talk about this in the mailbag, but before we get to that, I do want to talk about this film because, you know, I love Groundhog Day. I love time loop stories. I'm excited that Hollywood is getting excited about time loops again. The other day I was browsing on Netflix and it came across, there's this Marlon Wayans comedy called Naked, where he wakes, yes, up in an elevator, I think in Las Vegas or something. I don't know. I haven't watched it, but like, I'm like, wow, that's a weird take on a time loop that this guy wakes up naked in an elevator. But Boss Level, obviously, that's a reference to video games, right?
I mean, yes, it sounds like it, and you know, it just seems like the gamification of Hollywood projects continues there. I mean, it seems like, you know, if you want to sort of zoom out and take a look at things in a little bit more of a macro sense, it does seem like video games and movies and TV have been mixing in interesting ways. I was just watching an NFL football game the other day and noticed that on the NFL Network, the camera sort of hovers behind the quarterback on the field instead of showing the game, I guess, from one of the sidelines like it traditionally does. It basically mimics what a football video game looks like, and that's what the whole broadcast looks like. So I hadn't really noticed that before. I hadn't really paid much attention to NFL Network. I actually don't even know if that's something that happens every game. I'm sure people can write in and let us know. But
that actually happens a lot. That's an innovation, the one sole innovation that has stuck in the NFL from the XFL, the Vince McMahon
normal broadcasts use that I forget spider the name cam. Of the camera. Yes, the spider cam. They use it sort of sparingly, but this one broadcast, this one game I was watching, they used it for every snap, and I was like, wow, they're really leaning into the video game element here. So anyway, I'm not entirely sure what sort of specific video game influence is going to be involved with Boss Level, the movie. We don't know much beyond just that one sentence explanation of what the film is going to be like. But yeah,
it's also interesting that I think, you know, Hollywood has not been able to do a video game adaptation, right? There isn't like a great one yet, in mm-hmm. my opinion, and I think many people's opinion. But the ones that do come to mind are movies that are not, that I would consider a video game movie, but they're not based on a video game, like Edge of Tomorrow. Maybe something like Jumanji coming out might be like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Why would I? HT, do you have any opinions on time loop movies? Or is this something we should see more of, or is it oversaturated at this point?
I don't think we're at the point of oversaturation yet, but I really do enjoy time loop movies. Edge of Tomorrow is one of my favorite recent action films, and I really like just movies that play with time in general. So I think that it's fine. I have the same problems with Mel Gibson as Ben had, but I do like the idea. I think it's not quite original, but very creative and fun, and I'm always more open to seeing different ways of displaying action films, or even sort of trying to imitate the video game experience, because that's a very unique experience that they're starting to capture more on in movies, but not in video game movies themselves, which I think is really funny.
Okay, let's move on to the mailbag, because you brought up Mel Gibson, and because we got this letter from Mel Gibson. No, we didn't. We got a letter from Mark S. from Phoenix, and he writes in that after all the allegations against many heavyweights in Hollywood, is it acceptable to separate a person from their art? Can I still laugh at a Woody Allen movie? Can I still be in awe at a Roman Polanski film? Can I still be mesmerized by a Brett Ratner film? Like Red Dragon, and not solely filmmakers, also, you know, actors. He brings up Casey Affleck, the allegations against him and him feeling icky about kind of praising Manchester by the Sea last year. So I guess the question is, you know, what is our ability to separate art from the artist, and should we separate art from the artist? You know, we were talking about Mel Gibson. I know that you have been very vocal against Mel Gibson in the past on the podcast and on the site, Ben. Does this mean that you can never enjoy a Mel Gibson movie, and should you not?
Yeah, the difference between whether or not I should and whether or not I can is a line that I haven't quite been able to figure out how to cross or not. But I think for me, and I'm really interested in what you guys have to say about this before I just like go off on some big rant, but very quickly, for me, I think just the way that I approach it personally is, for me, it's a little easier to watch somebody's older movies before they were accused of something like that, because it's almost like so certainly not to downplay any of their victims and what they've gone through or anything like that, but it's almost like a more wistful experience of like looking back at what this person could have done or was doing before we found out that they were terrible people, basically. And I feel like I can still go back and watch, you know, Lethal Weapon and enjoy that movie. You know, Mel Gibson's current behavior and behavior of the past few years has not really impacted that movie, but I don't think I can watch a movie that was made after those allegations came out, where it just, because it seems like it's rewarding Hollywood's decision to not do anything about it and to not think about the victims in any of those situations, and to just you know, continue facilitating bad behavior. So that's sort of my general take on all this stuff, is I can maybe go back and look at some of these people's work you know, before the accusations came out.
I don't know. It's tough for me, because I feel like this happens with certain, and I've talked about this on the podcast in the past, with certain individuals like Mel Gibson. I have trouble watching him on the big screen. Like, I know he did that Jodie Foster movie a couple years ago where, you know, he had a puppet on his hand. I forget the name of that, but I had
The Beaver, I think.
Yes. I had trouble kind of, you know, laughing at that and whatnot. But, you know, other films with people, like, you know, I enjoy Tom Cruise's movies, and you know, I'm not sure if he knows that Scientology is evil, but you would think he would have to know, right? And, you know, supporting him is supporting Scientology, but for some reason, you know, I like watching him so much that for some reason it doesn't. Should it bother me? Should I not want to support him? You know, I enjoy his work so much that I see the movies. I think site-wide, you know, we've made the decision that we have to cover everything, because, you know, we cover a film and TV, and if we start making decisions based on who's an asshole and who's not, we're going to be covering very little on the site. and we are kind of a news site, even though we are a blog. As a person and me making decisions of what movies I go see, it's tough, because, like, you know, am I now not supposed to go back and watch like any of the Miramax movies that I loved that were produced by Harvey Weinstein? And do you know what I mean? Like, am I supposed to have a bad taste in my mouth? Should I, Kevin Spacey, you know, 5 years down the line, I'm betting he's going to be making movies again. And I'm betting, you know, he's a good actor, so it's probably going to be in some good stuff. Should I feel bad about eventually supporting him, even if he apologizes? And HT, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think this is an issue that everyone has to go through personally, that it's based on their own personal decisions, whether they want to separate the art from the artist. I'm of the opinion that art doesn't happen in a void. I think the artist is as connected to the art as, and like their own personal life, is connected to the art as anything else in context, the political context, the environmental context, is. So, and for me, I also struggle. I loved a lot of older Kevin Spacey movies. American Beauty, The Usual Suspects. Those were some of my favorite films. And yeah, it's hard because it's hard to divorce that context, knowing retroactively, can I go see that movie again and see it the same way I did? But I don't know if I can. And so that's something that everyone has to think about, I guess. I think for me, like where I would draw the line would probably be whether that story, that movie is incredibly informed by the artist, the director, filmmaker's personal experience. Woody Allen, for example, a lot of his films are incredibly informed by his own relationships and his own sort of penchant for younger women. So for me, I haven't seen a lot of his catalog, and that was because I started watching his films later, but then it also had to do with the allegations I learned of later, so I just never got around to watching them, and I've never felt worse off for it.
So was it that you were watching them and you were feeling, you know, the art, you know, you're feeling him in the work, and that disgusted you, or?
I think it was something that came retroactively. I did really like Midnight in Paris when I saw it, but I didn't watch many of his older films until later, and that was when I became more aware of the allegations surrounding him and his adopted daughter / current wife. And so I definitely saw some of his older films and was not able to particularly divorce that like context of knowing what the allegations surrounding him and knowing that kind of how that drove his films. So I just kind of, I never went around to watching his entire catalog and never felt the worse for it. So it's something that I think that is an issue that everyone has to sort of grapple with. And yeah, it's hard to say. That's where I would draw the line though, whether that the personal lives and particularly inform the movies and the stories that they are creating themselves. Cause I feel like that in turn is sort of encouraging or enabling them even more.
Yeah. You know, now would probably be a good time to bring up Louis C.K. and his latest film, which is what, I Love You Daddy, I think is the name of it.
Yes.
Which, you know, it seems like it, you know, we don't know if it's going to get released. Should it not get released? You know, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of people that put their hard work into this film, but it's, you know, has this guy that we know these things about that we don't feel good about. And, you know, it's probably, you can feel probably the artist in that movie. So, you know, what should the fate of that film be?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm sort of on the same page as HT there when it comes to thinking about how involved a person was in the creation of something. You know, for like Louis C.K.'s stand-up specials, for example, that's like just him. There's nobody else really. I mean, I sure you have like the crew and the people who like literally film him on a stage or whatever, but that's like a far smaller percentage of people crew-wise that are involved in the making of one of those specials than it is, you know, for somebody on the number of people that worked on a full feature. So I would definitely be fine and am fine with like Netflix scrapping his comedy special, because that's like basically just words coming directly from him. The movie, because he wrote and directed it, it also seems like, you know, it's basically a mouthpiece for whatever he wants to say. And especially with that movie, because I mean, that's like one of the weirdest examples you could choose, Peter, just because the film is like so much about, or supposedly so much about, his relationship or a relationship with a young girl in that that film and a much older man, and then there's like scenes involving somebody, you know, like miming masturbating in front of people, which is like what he was accused of doing and admitted to doing. So there's a lot of like extra baggage associated with that movie. But like thinking to the Miramax question you were talking about, like, should you be able to go back and watch the movies that Harvey Weinstein produced? I feel like it's probably easier to go back and do that, just knowing that Weinstein, I guess, essentially allowed. Yes, he was definitely involved with those productions, but a lot of times he would just be the person who could facilitate other people telling their stories, you know. And I'm much more apt to go back and be able to revisit those with my conscious clean personally than I would be, you know, watching something that like Harvey Weinstein directed, for example. He never directed a movie, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's This is such an interesting question, and I know that you were refraining from going off on a rant about Mel Gibson earlier, so I'm going to bring us back to that right now. Is you know, have you chosen to not see any Mel Gibson movie because of your feelings for that actor?
Yes, yeah. I mean, he was in, God, I'm trying to remember the name of it. I'll look it up here as I'm talking. But he was in this action movie not too long ago, a year or two ago. And it looked like, you know, a couple years ago, a few, 5-10 years ago, I probably would have been like, oh, yeah, this is interesting. It was called Bloodfather. This looks like the kind of like down and dirty, you know, indie sort of action movie that I would like watching. But because the film was made after he, you know, all of his, you know, personal behavior came out, I was like, I'm just not going to see this movie. Same thing with like the Expendables 3. I saw the first two movies, saw that he was in that one. And I was like, you know what? I'm good. I'm fine. Get the Gringo was another one. I probably would have given that one a shot and just decided not to. So, I guess actually one of the, more, intriguing examples of this is one of his upcoming movies. It's called Dragged Across Concrete, and it is directed by S. Craig Zahler, who is the guy who directed Bone Tomahawk. I love Bone Tomahawk. Zahler also directed Brawl in Cell Block 99, which I just saw a couple weeks ago and enjoyed that movie too. Vince Vaughn is in this movie, and Mel Gibson is in the movie, and it's just like, you know, it's about policemen and like strong arm tactics and like, you know, stuff that's very sort of in the news right now, but it stars Mel Gibson, and I'm like, you know what, I'm just not going to do that. And you know, that's where my personal line is, and I'm sure other people are going to value you know, Zahler's contributions to cinema and be interested in seeing this up and coming director in his work and be more apt to give that movie a shot. But I personally can't do it. So, okay, so yeah, that's me.
Here's the question. Say Mel Gibson has atoned for his sins. He has, you know, apologized. Is there a point where you can give him a chance? Like, what is where's the line? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
I think with certain people, obviously, you know, the sexual assaults, the Harvey Weinstein, I don't think I could ever give that guy a chance ever again.
Right. Right.
For me, I want to point out that actors like Mel Gibson, even actors who've messed up like Robert Downey Jr., who have faced criminal charges, they are able to bounce back so quickly in Hollywood and are able to find redemption in Hollywood 3 years after their alleged scandals. But actresses like Winona Ryder, who had a shoplifting scandal in the late 90s, early 2000s, that basically ruined her career for a good 10 years. And she was not able to find work, essentially, in Hollywood.
But do you think that's because she's a woman, or do you think that's because she kind of had this, I don't know how to say it, like people envisioned her as kind of like this good person, whereas Mel Gibson, it's like a man's man, you know, of course you punch someone. Do you know what I mean?
That's like a whole other issue, but I definitely think there's a certain double standard that's going on in Hollywood, and that women are upheld to a very high, much higher level than men are. And I think my issue is that, you know, maybe Mel Gibson can atone for his sins, but I just don't think that it's fair that even if he does, we can so quickly forgive him versus other actresses or women in the field who make a few mistakes and are not given quite the same chances. Yeah, I know this is a whole other issue, but it's an issue that plays into it for me.
Exactly. Yeah, and you're raising a great point. And because if Mel Gibson were to get like a full-on comeback, which, I mean, guys, he was nominated for Best Director at the Oscars last year. He's in the midst of a full-on comeback, which is insane to me. But exactly what HG is talking about, him being able to continue to tell stories takes away an opportunity from somebody else to be able to tell that story. And I can't reconcile that in my mind. So yeah, it's really hard. And Peter, I know there are definitely like different levels to this. You know, the Mel Gibson thing is way different than, you know, a sexual assault and all of that kind of stuff. But again, this is like HT was saying, this is going to be something that everybody's going to have to draw your own personal line and figure out, you know, how much you can take. And I think if the whole thing, if all of this, if it raises awareness of all the stuff that's going on, and if it makes us go back and look at some of these movies in a different way, or affects us so much that we can't even go back and revisit some of these movies. But if we have the knowledge of what's going on and, you know, maybe we can do something to help, then maybe it's worth it in the end.
I think that's probably a good sentence to end off on. But I would like to hear your feelings on this. So if you're out there and you have something that we have not said, please send it to peter@slashfilm.com. And obviously to submit questions to the mailbag, you send it to that same email address. That's peter@slashfilm.com. And please mention your name and general geographic location in case we mention it on there. You can find more of my work at slashfilm. You can find Ben at Ben Pears on Twitter. You can find HT at HTranBuoy and the Millennial Falcon podcast. You can find all the stories we mentioned today on slashfilm.com and linked in the show notes. And you can find this podcast published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. Please go to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review, and we will see you tomorrow.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.